Aim with
Roushon Men
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, remote control from 9/11 to an assault on Iran. Philip Giraldi in the American Conservative, May 9, 2008. Giraldi, a former CIA counterintelligence agent, came out with the news. Quote, there is considerable speculation and buzz in Washington suggesting that the National Security Council has agreed in principle to proceed with plans to attack the Revolutionary Guard Corps' elite Al-Quds force. They will attack a camp believed to be training Iraqi militants. The White House, Giraldi says, contacted the Iranian government through a channel provided by the leadership of the Kurdish region in Iraq, which traditionally has close ties to Tehran. The U.S. demanded that Iran admit that it has been interfering in Iraq and take steps to end support of various militant groups. There was also a warning about interfering in Lebanon. Giraldi states, the Iranian government reportedly responded quickly, restating its position that it would not discuss the matter until the U.S. ceases its own meddling employing Iranian dissident groups. This was May 9th. But if you look at the news on May 27th, a few weeks later, the Asia Times, Mohammed Kohn, Bush plans Iran airstrike by August. The timing is set. Cohn writes, the George W. Bush administration plans to launch an airstrike against Iran within the next 2 months, an informed source tells the Asia Times Online. This echoes other reports that have surfaced in the media in the United States recently. The source, a retired U.S. Korea diplomat and former Assistant Secretary of State, still active in foreign affairs community, spoke anonymously but stated unequivocally that the U.S. plans an airstrike against the Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps Al-Quds Force, the elite force that with an estimated strength of 90,000 fighters. The targets would include garrisons in southern and southwestern Iran near the border with Iraq. Here we have explicit plans. Today on Taking Aim, we are going to discuss the attacks on Iran, the supposed planned attacks on Iran, and also the linkage to 9/11, particularly the use of remote control apparatus on the supposed hijacked airplanes that struck the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the plans for attacking Iran have been part of the original 9/11 attack engineered by the government of the United States. For it was the agenda of permanent war and dismantling each country ad seriatim in the Arab East and in Central Asia that constituted the agenda for which 9/11 was the predicate. But in the article by Mohammed Cohen that you cite about an airstrike planned by August, it cites two key U.S. senators who have been briefed on the attack and who, according to the Asia Times, plan to go public in their opposition to the move, an opposition that has embraced many members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and even Brzezinski, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was in fact the architect of the original dismantling apparatus of the United States, which unfolded in Afghanistan as outlined by Brzezinski in the Grand Chessboard. But the two key U.S. senators who planned to go public had projected a New York Times op-ed piece to oppose the planned attack on Iran in August and to specify exactly what those plans were. A retired U.S. career diplomat and the former Assistant Secretary of State, as you mentioned, Maya, confirmed last week that these airstrikes are already on plan. And the targets will include garrisons in the southern and southwest of Iran and near the border with Iraq. And indeed, last September, the Senate approved the resolution by a vote of 76-22, urging George Bush to declare the IRGC a terrorist organization. And following this sense of the Senate resolution, the White House declared sanctions against the Quds force and declared it a terrorist group. This attack on Iran will fit the Bush administration's declared policy on Iraq and indeed it reflects the overall agenda of imperialism, although the timing of that attack is under challenge from sectors of the ruling class in the aftermath of the catastrophe in Iraq. But nonetheless, the agenda is set forth, and it is not merely in the Asia Times and the New York Times that this plan to create the climate for the forthcoming so-called election are unfolding.
Ralph, we have to understand that these two senators are Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat from California, and Senator Richard Lugar, the Republican of Indiana. These are people who are not peaceniks. These are foremost warmongers. Feinstein, member of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Lugar is the ranking Republican on the Foreign Relations Committee. But they do not think that attacking Iran at this moment is in the interest of the capitalist ruling class.
They consider that the destabilization for imperial interests in the region and the presence of a massive resistance in Iraq, a total isolation of U.S. forces in that very country, and a similar process unfolding in Afghanistan renders them extremely vulnerable to the consequences of an all-out attack on Iran. But we will find in the report by Mataba of May 12th, ratcheting up for war on Iran again, that the article by Stephen Lendman is very clear. Led by Dick Cheney, the Bush administration wants the war on Iran, and so does the Israeli lobby. It doesn't mean they'll get it, because powerful forces in Washington and the Pentagon are opposed at this moment in time. But nonetheless, Bush signed a secret finding authorizing a covert offensive against the Iranian regime and is, quote, unprecedented in its scope, providing for a range of actions across the broad area involving hundreds of millions of dollars. And elements of the scene include the scheme include the following: targeted assassination, funding insurgent groups within Iran, destabilizing at the same time Syria and Hezbollah, and kicking off things at the earliest possible moment. This was cited in an article in the New York Times online on May 4th by Michael Smith. The United States is drawing up imminent plans to strike an Iranian insurgency camp as the prelude to a larger attack. On April 7th, Haaretz reported as follows: Israel's largest ever emergency drill has started, preparing for the threats of a missile attack on central Israel in response to a prepared attack upon Iran. Now, the proposition that is being put forth here has been addressed by Joint Chiefs Chairman Peter Pace, who was far from on board. And he had signaled this early at a National Press Club luncheon. Quote, "It is the absolute irresponsibility of everybody in uniform to disobey an order that is illegal or immoral." And he later added that commanders should not obey illegal and immoral orders to use weapons of mass destruction and commit crimes against humanity. This kind of language from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is a measure of the extent to which sectors of the ruling class are extremely alarmed about the crisis that imperialism will face in the aftermath of an attack upon Iran and its 70 million population.
And that's why Peter Pace was removed. Ralph, this article to which you refer, Stephen Lendman, Ratcheting Up the War on Iran Again, is a very important article. So I'd like to give the internet site where people can find it. That's mataba.net, mathaba.net, and this was posted on May 12th. The author, Stephen Lendman, Ratcheting Up the War on Iran Again. We'll discuss it further. I want, before we proceed any further, to announce that time is running out for people to become involved in the very important 9/11 ballot petition drive. In discussing an assault on Iran, and as we will during the show today, discussing 9/11 again, it is imperative that there is a true investigation. As you know, the investigation that took place, the formal investigation by the government, was a sham. a total sham, supporting the official fiction. We must have a true investigation, and that is why people in New York have gathered together to put on the New York City ballot the call for a real investigation, a citizens' investigation. Please get involved. You can download the petition itself at www.nyc911initiative.org/petitioning.htm. Please go to the nyc911.org site if this is too complicated for you and download the petition. Sign up your neighbors, your family, your coworkers. Send everybody on your email list the site. And get out on the street. Volunteer. Get 10 people to sign. And then get those 10 people to sign. And pretty soon we'll reach the 100,000 signatures that we need in the next few weeks. Please, every one of our Taking Aim listeners, get out on the street. Go to the www.nyc911initiative.org site. Ralph?
Well, Maya, the opposition of PACE is an expression of the concern of major sectors of the ruling class, as I mentioned. And that included major naval figure in Admiral Fallon, who had expressed similar concerns about the consequences of the imminent attack and was sacked as a consequence. But before Fallon's sacking, three U.S. warships, including the USS Cole guided missile destroyer, were deployed to the Lebanese coast in preparation for the attack on Iran. And Russia's U.N. Ambassador Vitaly Churkin declared that the proposed attack and planned attack threatened the stability of the region. Then came Middle East tour of Cheney with clear indications of the purpose. In the aftermath of Cheney's visit to Saudi Arabia, the newspaper Okaz, which is a virtually official paper in Saudi Arabia, reported that the Saudi Shura Council was formulating, quote, national plans to deal with sudden nuclear radioactive hazards that will engulf the kingdom, in anticipation that the Pentagon will be using nuclear weapons against Iran. This is Okaz in Saudi Arabia. So this is not merely an idle question, nor does the opposition of major sectors of the Pentagon and the ruling class deter that sector of the rulers that is determined to pursue the continued policies that were set in motion in the aftermath of the necessary pretext, namely 9/11. And I should mention as well, Maya, that the New York Times' Michael Gordon, who has taken up where Judith Miller left off, and Judith Miller is the Mossad operative who had been embedded in the New York Times and had been orchestrating the neocon agenda for a considerable number of years. Michael Gordon cut from the same cloth, reporting in the New York Times that Iran is, in fact, the necessary target because it is training Hezbollah and it is training troops that are attacking U.S. forces in Iran, and the whole propaganda disinformation campaign that is the pretext that was in fact challenged by Admiral Fallon. But one of the important things that has emerged from this analysis of these imminent attack plans for Iran is that the secret estimate of actual wounded and casual U.S. casualties in Iraq is 85,000. 85,000 U.S. soldiers. That includes the total numbers of wounded. It includes casualties such as brain trauma. It is an enormous number, and it is in a sense a measure of the a concern that sectors of the ruling class have that the 85,000 is the tip of the iceberg, because the consequences for those soldiers who have returned traumatized and suffering from neurological damage are such. 19% in the RAND study with traumatic head injuries from severe concussion to major head wounds. Substantial percentage of the veterans having what is called a double hit, both brain injury and advanced depression and post-traumatic syndrome. This is a calculus that is going to, sooner or later, engulf this ruling class. I don't even speak of the 2 million Iraqis who have been murdered in this genocidal war. But this preparation for a October surprise in August, with a major attack upon Iran to set the agenda for the next president of the United States, was discussed on Keith Olbermann's MSNBC on yesterday in an interview with Scott McClellan, who was the former spokesperson, press spokesperson for Bush, who had blown the whistle on his participation in the propaganda lies regarding the preparation for the attack upon Iraq. And at a particular moment in time, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann stated the following, asked the following, is the White House preparing an encore, preparing us for an attack upon Iran? Now, what's interesting about this is the response of McClellan. He said, we should be prepared for this. He said, knowing what you know, then Olbermann followed up, if White House spokeswoman Dana Perino starts making noises similar to what you heard from Ari Fleischer in 2002, would you be suspicious of a pending attack on Iran? Yes, I would be, McClellan said. And before talking with this and a blasé shrug, he continued, the worst-kept secret in Washington is that Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney are looking for a pretext to order an air and missile attack upon Iran. And the setting is the expose by McClellan at this moment in time of that very agenda with respect to Iraq. The timing suggests that this is, again, an expression of the apprehension upon sectors of the ruling class about the relentless determination to pursue the attack on Iran that has been in the offing, as Giraldi, as you mentioned, Maya, discussed on the 9th of May.
Ralph, speaking of Dick Cheney, these are his words. He states, now it's a nuclearized Iran. Preemptive deterrent is the strategy. And Dick Cheney speaks of Iran in such manner. But he isn't the only one. This is the language of McCain. This is of John McCain. This is the language of Barack Obama. This is the language of Hillary Clinton. What Dick Cheney, however, states is that Iran is, quote, right at the top of the list of world trouble spots. He calls Tehran, he always refers to it as, quote, a darkening cloud in the region. And he states overtly, quote, obviously they're heavily involved in trying to develop a nuclear weapons enrichment to weapons grade levels. And anything that the Iranian government says, he says is a lie. So you have here, particularly Dick Cheney, setting up the very categories that were used against Iraq, the fake weapons of mass destruction. But look at the words of John McCain and Barack Obama, too. An article by Jonathan Landy that appeared in the McClatchy newspapers just yesterday, Monday, June 2nd. Both McCain and Obama exaggerating Iran's nuclear program. Both, he says, Senator John McCain and Barack Obama say that Iran is developing nuclear weapons. The U.S. intelligence community, Landy notes, thinks that Iran halted an effort to build a nuclear warhead in mid-2003. However, I have to interject, there is no evidence, there never has been evidence, ever, 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 that Iran had been building a nuclear warhead. Landy says, the UN International Atomic Energy Agency, which is investigating the program, has found no evidence to date of an active Iranian nuclear weapons project. But the candidates still come out with these comments. In a major speech Monday to a powerful Jewish American lobbying group, that is the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, McCain asserted that Iran is actively developing nuclear weapons that threaten the security of Israel and could be passed to terrorist groups. His actual quote is as follows, quote, Tehran's pursuit of nuclear weapons poses an unacceptable risk, a danger we cannot allow. Well, that is McCain, but also Barack Obama. On Fox News last Friday, in an interview, he rebuked President Bush for rejecting direct negotiations with Iran on nuclear weapons, but he also accepted a premise that Iran was developing nuclear weapons. Quote, "Iran is stronger now than when George Bush took office," he said on the Fox News program. But he continued, "And the fact that we have not talked to them means that they have been developing nuclear weapons," end quote. There you have it, Barack Obama accepting the fake premise of Iran developing nuclear weapons and that this is a problem. Ralph?
Maya, these are based upon the representations in part of IAEA Director General Mohammed El-Baradei, who told his Board of Governors that the agency is continuing to look into allegations that Iraq had conducted secret studies related to developing a nuclear warhead for missiles, and that Iran is conducting the same research. Iran has denounced these documents as forgeries and has made explicit that it is, well, you have to put this in context, brothers and sisters. U.S. imperialism, with all candidates and all party, all members of the Democratic and Republican Party on the same agenda here, are blockading Iran, cutting Iran off from key components for its oil refineries, thereby cutting it off from the ability to provide refined products and affordable gasoline to its population. One of the main incentives for Iran to pursue a nuclear energy program to counter the effective blockade of their refining capacity. But that is the context in which imperialism creates the climate, not to mention the 250 nuclear and hydrogen bomb-bearing missiles that the Zionist state possesses and aims at Iran and any state in the region that it aspires to destroy and to dismantle.
Ralph, but even though Israel is forever stating that it doesn't have nuclear weapons, just the other day, former President Jimmy Carter came out and stated explicitly that Israel has nuclear missiles.
Mordecai Vanunu was put in prison for 18 years by the Zionist state, and who had worked at the Zionist nuclear facilities, had exposed the documents to the Sunday Times. When I met Shimon Peres in Tel Aviv in 1962, when he was Ben-Gurion's Minister of Defense, one of the issues that I discussed with Shimon Peres was the Israeli nuclear program. I was there negotiating with Ben-Gurion about a set of proposals that Nasser had entrusted us, Bertrand Russell and myself, to take to various Arab leaders at the time. Ben-Gurion, of course, was totally contemptuous of any suggestion of any kind of accommodation with the Arab East, with the Palestinian population, of course. Notwithstanding that, the agenda of Zionist expansion and the nuclear program in the Zionist state is a fact of no one with any awareness of the realities of the region can deny. It's essential, I think, to understand when we're discussing these presumptive planned attacks upon Iran that the opposition to these attacks has been entirely tactical from within the ruling class. And indeed, the agenda of imperialism in the region is one shared by all wings of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party itself. I speak not merely of Hillary Clinton's call for the obliteration of Iran. Here's an important speech of Barack Obama's in August 2007, "The War We Need to Win." And he thanks Lee Hamilton for hosting him at the Wilson Center and for, quote, "your leadership of the 9/11 Commission and the Iraq Study Group." He says, "Thanks to the 9/11 Commission, we know that 6 years ago to this week, President Bush received a briefing with the headline, 'Bin Laden Determined to Strike in the United States.' It came," Barack Obama said, "during what the commission called the Summer of Threat, when the system was blinking red about an impending attack. So here Barack Obama celebrates the cover-up 9/11 commission, but invokes the idea that the that bin Laden was preparing to strike the United States prior to September 11th and that Bush was fully cognizant of it. What does Barack Obama conclude from this piece of disinformation and ruling class propaganda, i.e. that Barack Osama bin Laden was preparing an attack on the United States? He spoke as follows. Instead of color-coded politics of fear and patriotism as the possession of one party, we require a diplomacy and a policy that will support the right war at the right time. And Barack Obama goes on to describe how he supports and would escalate the war in Afghanistan and finish the fight with bin Laden and al-Qaeda. He is quite explicit about this. Obama talks about the necessity to turn the page. When I am president, we will wage the war that has to be won. A comprehensive strategy with five elements on the right battlefields in Afghanistan and Pakistan, developing the capability to take out the terrorists and the world's most deadly weapons, engaging the world to dry up the support for terror and extremism. The first step is getting off the wrong battlefield in Iraq and taking the fight to the terrorists to win in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Ralph, we will discuss this in further detail after this brief station identification.
Murdering it.
We'll touch them, don't you worry, sir.
That's the spirit.
All aboard for the Highlands!
Hi, this is Charles Edwards. I play Richard Hannay in the 39 Steps at the Court Theatre.
Hi, this is Jennifer Farron. I play three different characters in the 39 Steps.
I'm Cliff Saunders. I play Man 1.
And I'm Arnie Burton, and I play Man 2.
And you're tuned to
WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
99.5 FM, streaming on the web at WBAI.org.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, Remote Control from 9/11 to an Assault on Iran. I want to take a moment to thank all of you who contributed to the WBAI Fund Drive and sustain the station and Taking Aim on the air. I also want to remind you once again, we must have the truth of 9/11. It is imperative. This is a key moment. The whole issue of permanent war, of what is taking place in our lives each and every day today, depends on a real investigation, to bring, to speak truth to power. And that is why I urge each and every one of you who isn't already involved to get out on the streets and join this important petition drive in New York City. If you live in the suburbs, you can come into New York and help get the signatures of people who are registered New York City voters, and also help to register people to vote in New York if they aren't already registered. You would go to the www.nyc911initiative.org site. You can also go to the nyc911truth.org to find out more information about this important ballot initiative drive. And if you need to make a phone call, Carol Holland at 212-353-5084 is out petitioning at 6th Avenue and 10th Street during the weekdays and would like people to join with her. But if you can get to the internet site, you can download a petition, get your friends and family to sign, and remember, once they sign, have them download a petition and get more people to sign too. Again, we urge you, we really urge you, please get involved. This is the New York 9/11 initiative to get it on the ballot. Time is running out. Do not think about it and delay. Get with it now. Ralph? Ralph?
Barack Obama, on August 1st, 2007, the war we need to win. As president, I will deploy at least two additional brigades to Afghanistan. I will reinforce our counterterrorism operations. I will expand NATO's efforts against the Taliban. We will not repeat the mistakes of Iraq. We will increase all types of aid, including non-military aid, by at least $1 billion, he goes on to say. He outlines a program in which he also targets Pakistan. There will be no safe haven for terrorists, he said. In fact, he states that the high-value threats in Pakistan will be targeted by him. If we have actionable intelligence about high-value terrorist targets, we will act in Afghanistan. Beyond Pakistan, there is a core of terrorists in the tens of thousands who have made their choice to attack America. The second step in my strategy will be to build our capacity and our partnerships, and we will track down, capture, and kill terrorists around the world and deny them the world's most dangerous weapons. I will not hesitate to use military force to take out the terrorists. This requires a broad set of capabilities as outlined in the Army and Marine Corps' new counterinsurgency manual. I will ensure that our military has more stealth, agility, and will and be more lethal in its ability to capture and kill terrorists. We will recruit, train, and equip our armed forces to better target the terrorists, and we will help foreign militaries to do this around the world. I will strengthen our intelligence. This is more than an organizational chart. He says this will not merely be an American mission. Al-Qaeda and its allies operate in over 100 countries. I will create a shared security partnership program and forge an international intelligence and law enforcement infrastructure to take down terrorist networks from remote islands of Indonesia to the sprawling cities of Africa. At least $5 billion for counterterrorism operation immediately, or if in countries around the world. He goes on. I have worked in the Senate with Dick Lugar to pass a law that will help the United States detect and stop the smuggling of weapons of mass destruction. He will increase security in the ports. He will increase security where longshoremen work. This is an agenda of repression, of attacks upon the working class, and of major escalation of the imperial agenda. And here on September 4th, 2007, a headline of Barack Obama's speech, hit Iran where it hurts. Americans need to come together to confront the challenge posed by Iraq. The decision to wage a misguided war in Iraq has substantially strengthened Iran, which poses the greatest strategic challenge to U.S. interests in the Middle East in a generation. Iran supports violent groups and sectarian politics in Iraq, fuels terror and extremism across the Middle East and the world, and continues to make progress on its nuclear program in defiance of the international community. And meanwhile, Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has decided that Israel must be wiped off the map. Barack Obama, brothers and sisters.
Ralph, we have to be clear, as we usually are on taking aim, that the interests of Barack Obama, the interests of the ruling class, is not at heart democracy in Iran. After all, it was the United States that was instrumental in the overthrow of Mossadegh in Iran many years ago. We have to look at Iran in the same way as we discuss the interests in Iraq. Iran is today the second largest oil exporter in the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. That's OPEC. And it's the fourth largest overall. About 70% of Iran's oil exports go to Asia, particularly China. That is the biggest customer for Iranian oil. And trade between the two countries was $20 billion last year and will expand. So the 70% of the oil exports, as I mentioned, going to Asia, and the U.S. has barred oil imports from Iran since 1995 and has restricted U.S. companies from investing there. So we have with Iran, as with Iraq, key oil source of the Middle East. You control Iran, you control Iraq, and you control the spigots of oil and the industrial development throughout the world. Ralph?
A central part of the program of Barack Obama and of the ruling class is to escalate the operations of the United States in Afghanistan. On today's date, Tuesday the 3rd of June, James Cogan, the World Socialist website, has an important article on the U.S. offensive in Afghanistan. The major U.S. offensive targeting alleged Taliban guerrillas around the city of Garmsa in the southern province of Helmand has displaced over 4,000 families, according to provincial governor Gulab Mangal. Most are living in squalid conditions on the outskirts of the provincial capital, Lashkar, and have not received any food. Ahmed Shah, a 43-year-old peasant farmer, told IRIN news agency, "My family and I live almost 10 kilometers from Lashkar city. I have a shelter from blanket pieces to live under in open areas. I left my home with four children and my wife 3 weeks ago. I need a tent. I need food. My children will die under the hot sun, burning sun of Lashkar." This is the condition that affects the population and the peasantry in Afghanistan across the board. Mahmoud Garmshiri, a member of the Afghan parliament from Helmand, told a press conference in Kabul that U.S. troops are smashing houses and detaining people en masse. Civilians are being killed by American airstrikes and saturation bombing. The Frontier Post reported the statement of another major Helmand politician, Mohammed Anwar, that the number of families displaced in his region was over 10,000. 10,000 families. Mohammed Ankuzadeh, the head of the Afghan Parliamentary Committee for Internal Security, told journalists that the harsh treatment and torture of civilians by U.S. troops was causing total alienation of the population and has already led to more areas to fall into the hands of the resistance. The offensive in the Garmsa area, which is one of the main assembly and transit points for militants coming from the mountain bases along the Afghan and Pakistani border, is the largest conducted by U.S. and NATO forces in Afghanistan for years. Meanwhile, Marine Colonel Pete Cantronzio told Canadian reporters that the fighting over the past several weeks has been the heaviest of the operation. These plans and these operations are being expanded. The outgoing NATO commander in Afghanistan, U.S. General Dan McNeil, told journalists that insurgents, after experiencing weeks of pressure, are going back to sanctuaries in another country, meaning Pakistan. McNeil, echoing Barack Obama, called for escalation of the war in Afghanistan and for its extension into Pakistan. Canadian troops have launched an offensive called Rolling Thunder in the districts of Kandahar province, and the Global Mail description of the NATO attack on the Zari town of Pashmul makes clear that civilians are being forced from their homes en masse. Tens of thousands of Afghan civilians are being killed. After 6 years of the U.S.-led invasion of Afghanistan, and despite the deaths of tens of thousands of guerrillas, the anti-occupation insurgency is extending beyond the reach of the southern provinces. Over 60,000 troops of occupation are incapable of establishing any effective suppression or occupation of the resistance itself. According to figures published in the May 29th feature on Afghanistan by the German magazine Der Spiegel, there are over 9,000 attacks on U.S., NATO, and Afghan government forces in 2007, an increase of 10 times. But this is the war that Barack Obama promises to expand. This is the war that Obama stipulates when he aligned himself with the foreign policy of the Republican Party. At a town hall meeting, Obama praised George H.W. Bush for the way he handled the Persian Gulf War. And he said that the truth is that my foreign policy is returned to the realistic policy of George Bush's father and in many ways of Ronald Reagan. And that is consistent with the declaration recently disclosed in a private memorandum by the National Security Advisor to Barack Obama, Anthony Lake, that Barack Obama, this is a private memorandum, plans to keep 60 to 80,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, brothers and sisters, in Iraq. That is the context of the one big property party with two names. The Democrats and the Republicans are but aspects of the imperial agenda, and Anthony Lake, who was a key security figure for Clinton, continues his role, as do the Brzezinski brothers, in preparing for the next wave of imperial onslaught in the region. Iraq will be drawn down to a mere 60,000 to 80,000 occupying troops while the wars are escalated in Afghanistan. Our preparations are made to extend them to Pakistan.
Ralph, referring back to the original speech that Barack Obama gave at the Wilson Center with the in the presence of Lee Hamilton, leader of the 9/11 Commission and the Iraq Study Group, he had stated there explicitly about involvement not just in Afghanistan but also in Pakistan, because he stated that Pakistan is the staging area for attacks in Afghanistan. And he said, quote, "I understand that President Musharraf has his own challenges, but let me make this clear. There are terrorists holed up in those mountains who murdered 3,000 Americans. They are plotting to strike again. It was a terrible mistake to fail to act when we had a chance to take out an Al-Qaeda leadership meeting in 2005. If we have actionable intelligence about high-value terrorist targets and President Musharraf won't act, we will," end quote. And he is talking about acting in Pakistan itself. Ralph?
We began this program, brothers and sisters, by discussing what we call remote control. The plans for Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan are but the expression of the imperial agenda of a system in terminal decay, predicated upon the false flag operation of 9/11. Newt Gingrich, appearing at a Long Island bookstore last month, former Speaker of the House, was asked by a member of the audience why the United States had not been hit again since 9/11. And he said, "I think the greatest danger is that we will not have another attack." That seems paradoxical. He says the more successful we may be at intercepting and stopping these guys, the less proof there is that we're in danger. And therefore, the better we do at making sure there isn't an attack, the easier it is for the public to say, well, there never was going to be an attack anyway. We should every once in a while allow an attack to get through, to remind us, said Gingrich. Now, that revealing declaration by Gingrich is not isolated to him. On May 16, 2008, the statement was cited by Donald Rumsfeld talking with top military analysts about how the political agenda that they had outlined could be successfully restored.
Ralph, they're referring to what happened on May 16th is that an hour-long recording of the valedictory luncheon of Rumsfeld that was hosted on December 12, 2006 and contained many of the generals, Lieutenant General Michael DeLong, Wayne Downing, Robert Scales Jr., David Grange, Donald Shepard, James Marks, and others, were attending this valedictory luncheon, and they were all having a rollicking time. And at that luncheon, the following statement was made by Rumsfeld. Go ahead.
Well, in the context of the bemoaning by Lieutenant General Michael DeLong of the shrinking political support for the war plans of on Capitol Hill, and he stated that sympathy for the Bush administration's agenda will only be achieved with a new terror attack. And Rumsfeld agreed, stating that the behavior pattern of U.S. citizens of both in the United States and Europe, he said, suggests that they are not concerned about the threat of terror. And he went on to say that there is a correction for that. And the correction of that is to have some more attacks. He said the perception of the threat is so low in this society that the behavior pattern reflects that assessment. He says the correction for that is another attack. The correction for that is another attack. And he, by the way, invokes the image of Syngman Rhee. Syngman Rhee was the ruthless, maniacal dictator of South Korea that U.S. imperialism imposed. Instructed that Rumsfeld said it's necessary to have a new Syngman Rhee-like authoritarian dictator in Iraq. See, Saddam wasn't sufficient for him. But the major issue here is that there is now an orchestrated revelation of the necessity for a new...
We seem to have lost our phone connection with Ralph Schoenman and Demaya Schoen of Taking Aim. We'll be back. We'll try to reestablish that phone connection with them in just a moment and bring you the conclusion of Taking Aim here on WBAI. Establish our phone connection with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Okay, Ralph and
yes,
Maya.
Yes, Michael, brother and sister, sorry about that.
Ralph, this was a very unusual problem. It was not as a result of WBAI. It was not as a result of the connections. Ralph and I are in two different locations. I think this was direct interference, given the subject matter.
Well, that's entirely possible, Maya, but let's continue with it.
But Ralph, we have the closing moments now, and we'll continue this next week, because I do want to announce again that these are the last days of the petition drive, and we need each and every one of our Taking Aim listeners in the tri-state area of New York, and particularly those in the five boroughs of New York City, to get involved with the New York 9/11 initiative. This is the initiative for a new investigation, for a citizens' commission to be created that will have a real investigation of the events of 9/11. And we need each and every one of you to get out and collect 200 signatures in the next few weeks. And you can download the petition at nyc911initiative.org. And once you download it, we hope you sign up your neighbor, your friend, your coworkers, and then get them to send out on their email list and have their friends and family and coworkers also sign the initiative. If each and every one of you collects 200 signatures in the next couple of weeks, we will reach the goal, and this will be on the New York ballot. Please get out there. Visit www.nyc911initiative.org and get involved. And there are great pictures at the site. You can see all the good times that people are having out there with the petition drive. So please get with it. Ralph?
In the Philadelphia Daily News, in August of last year, columnist Stu Bukowski openly called for another 9/11 to help the United States restore a community of national resolve. Lieutenant Colonel Doug Delaney, chair of War Studies program at the Royal Military College in Kingston, Ontario, told the Toronto Star, the key to bolstering resolve is another terrorist attack like 9/11 or the London Transit bombings of 2 years ago. The same idea was expressed explicitly in a private memo from the GOP, which called for new attacks to validate the president's war on terror and support his image as a leader. In fact, in July 2007, former Republican Senator Rick Santorum stated that a series of terrorist attacks should occur within the next year in order to change American citizens' perception of the war. And the new chairman of the Arkansas Republican Party, Dennis Milligan, said, we need more attacks on American soil in order for President Bush to regain popular approval. This is not an isolated series of statements, brothers and sisters. It is the explicit recognition that the attacks that were engineered on September 11th are the predicate for the ability to suppress the population and to persist in this genocidal agenda. We will be able next week to document what we were planning to do today, the ways in which remote control was the mechanism for sending those planes into the World Trade Center towers, and how the entire technology under remote control, under manipulated control, under contrived false flag control, through Doug Zackheim of the Pentagon, through his company System Planning Corporation's Command Transmitter Center, through Triadata, which is his subcompany, which was the security company overseeing the 1993 World Trade Center at the time of the attack there, that all of this is the elaborate preparation and technological predicate for the false flag operation of 9/11. And it is a clear presentiment of what we can expect, no matter the nominal head of state, the nominal person in office, in the months and years ahead.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Shumlin
and Maya Schoen. Next week we'll be back in the studio, and we hope to be with you very soon next week. Please listen. Please send in your contributions to WBAI. Get out and petition for the 9/11 commission to be on the ballot. And go visit our website at www.takingaimradio.com, where you'll find our archive of our programming since 2001.